Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Liz Waitzig, and if you look at your books, my name is not in your book because, as somebody said earlier, these applications or these abstracts were due a long time ago, and there's been some shifts in employment and some travel restrictions. And so I'm a consultant with Change Matrix. I'm a partner there. And we worked with Project Launch in Illinois to do a number of things, which I'll talk about in a little bit. But I'm really here representing Project Launch, Illinois Project Launch, as the community example of what I want to talk about. And then the public health approach to children's mental health, which is a conceptual framework that I wrote along with some co-authors. So that's a part of the presentation as well. So just know that while I'm thrilled to be here representing Illinois Project Launch, I am no expert. And so I'm going to offer their story as told to me, but if it gets much below that in terms of questions, I will have to refer you to their website. So that's just a little bit of a disclaimer there. So let's see. It is this arrow, not this arrow, this arrow. All right, so let's talk a little bit about what Project Launch is. Anybody have any experience with Project Launch in the room? Okay, so Project Launch is a federally funded grant program. SAMHSA funded it, and they have a number of things that they wanted to do. They wanted to increase the quality of evidence-based programs, mostly for young children. So this is a very young children-focused effort. And it is an effort that has a, both a state component, so they had a state wellness component, and they had a local wellness component. And so when you applied, you had to have a local site that was going to implement a program that was aimed at improving the social and emotional wellness of young children. And then you had a state level component, and their job was really to support through policy, through funding, the work of the local folks, but also to replicate that. Because we know that sometimes these grant programs, they get funded, they do a really good job. When the funding goes away, the program goes away, and it was really fun working on it, but there's really nothing to point to as something that lasts. And so the state work was supposed to say, okay, what did we learn from these local folks? How can we replicate that? How can we sustain it if need be? And so my work was to work with the state level folks doing their strategic planning, to work with the state and local folks, because sometimes because they see things a little bit differently, they have a little bit of a challenge communicating. So I did some conflict-based work with them. And then also to help the state think about what was going on at the local level in terms of a public health approach, and then bring that back up to the state to impact their policy. Project Launch is particularly consistent with the public health approach because they're very interested in whole wellness for young children and integrating some of these pieces of health that we know are so important for young children. And so you'll see from the five prevention and promotion strategies that they are very consistent. So first of all, they're interested in screening and assessment. So the way that screening and assessment happens in lots of childhood settings is an important component of Launch. And by the way, these are all required parts of the program, even though they know that these are going to be tailored to the local site. They really want to make sure that social and emotional wellness opportunities are integrated into behavioral health, because we know that wherever else young children are, they are in their we hope they're in their pediatrician's offices. So integrating that, we're doing developmental screening. We want to know if you can walk and talk. We also want to do some social and emotional work and integrate those two efforts in pediatrician's office. They wanted to make sure that mental health consultation was available for families and for childcare settings. So consultants could go out and help these programs, these childcare programs or Head Start programs or even in-home childcare for that matter. How do we change the environment to support young children as opposed to trying to change young children to fit into their environment? So mental health consultation is really helpful in helping environments do a better job supporting young children no matter where they are and helping them do better. They had an emphasis on home visiting through and really training their home visitors to focus on social and emotional well-being. And I'm just going to say right now that we talked about mental health in the monograph. So if I talk about mental health and I talk about social and emotional wellness, I kind of mean the same thing, even though in the public lexicon, it doesn't necessarily mean the same thing. But we took that approach. And then lastly, really thinking about family strengthening and parent skills training. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that in particular, because the way in which Project Launch in the local area figured out what their population needed is that they hosted parent cafes, and they really listened to their parents. So I want to, there's two computers going on here, and I got to make sure that I pay attention to both of them. A little bit about the local site. It was West Chicago. Anybody know Chicago very well? So when I say West Chicago, do you know a little bit? Yeah, the West Side. Yeah, it's an area that needed some support, right? And in fact, you can see from this list, there was a lot of stuff going on that made West Chicago a particularly appropriate place to put the local site for Project Launch. There was a very high rate of infant mortality, high rate of child maltreatment and children in foster care. In fact, the highest in the state of Illinois. I mean, that's saying something, right? There were not a lot of current programs that were prepared to address children's mental health or even adult mental health. And there were issues of interfamily violence. And most importantly, there was a stigma that was attached culturally but also community-wide to taking on or acknowledging that there was a need for mental health services, accessing them, and then participating in them. So this was the site that they chose for Project Launch. So I want to talk a little bit about the parent cafes, because you would think with a profile that you just saw that offering increased mental health services might be an appropriate response to this. Well, there were some mental health providers, not a lot, but there were some. And I think the wisdom of the local young child wellness coordinator was that it wasn't her first response to offer more mental health services. What she did was she gathered the parents together, the family members together. And anybody familiar with Art of Hosting here? Okay, so she used Art of Hosting as a process to really engage family members in conversations about what their lives were like. What's going on for you? What's going on in the community? Help us understand what's available, what you wish was available, what you need, and how we might do a better job of creating an environment that would make you want to take advantage of any of these services. So what they learned was that there was a high rate of interfamily violence and of sexual assault that was kind of creating a community-wide depression. In fact, it didn't matter that the services might be there. There was really no will, no motivation to take advantage of them. So maybe this wasn't the right thing. So then she got together the providers and the community stakeholders and asked them similar questions. And she realized through weaving these stories together that there was a high rate of trauma. In fact, used ACEs as a framework to understand the community-wide trauma that was going on from the family members. This not only helped the family members know that they were being listened to, it also helped the providers realize that just treating folks with a diagnosis wasn't getting at it. They needed to broaden and expand their approach to understanding trauma, understanding ACEs, as a way to understand the folks that were coming in their doors. And lastly, they weren't the only folks that could support social and emotional wellness, aka mental health, of young children and their families. So it became a much broader approach. So they acknowledged that, and she really rooted herself in what was going on in the research around ACEs, and began to apply that framework to the population that she was serving. So the second step was that conversation with family members wasn't the last step, the last time they got these family members together. When the family members came together and shared their stories with each other and shared their stories with providers, they began to own the community. They began to own the story, the ecological story that was going on for the families and the providers and, in fact, the whole community. And they kept coming back. And they came back to provide peer support. They came back to find out more information. They began to use the services that were available to them. And then the stigma began to decrease because they were all in this together. And it wasn't a negative thing that they were participating in. People got support for their social and emotional wellness in lots of unexpected places. So in addition to using ACEs and using trauma as a way to understand the community and offer a community-wide response, so Chil Salvador also picked up this monograph that myself and a number of other folks authored a while ago around a public health approach to children's mental health. And this public health approach, we began writing it in 2008. It was funded by SAMHSA, by the Children, Youth, and Family Branch, and it was published by Georgetown in 2010. And the reason that we set out to do this, the animation isn't working on here. Well, I'll just talk through this piece. One of the things that really motivated us was that the World Health Organization's definition around health, we felt also applied to mental health. The health actually included mental health. And just think about this for a moment. When you think about health, you have a positive system that looks at developmental milestones and looks at the achievement of those milestones. Do you walk at one? Do you talk at two? Can you do all of the cognitive things? Are you growing according to milestones that pediatricians look at? Mental health doesn't really have a correlating system. When you think about mental health, what we think about is what? Disease. We think about what's wrong. And so we really were hoping that a mental health system, if they took a public health approach, could actually offer a positive system as opposed to just a deficit-based system, that mental health would be more than just the absence of a diagnosis, more than just the absence of trauma, and that mental health could actually apply to all children and to all people. It made sense to us. So maybe mental health wouldn't just be the absence of a problem or the absence of disease. We were mental health policymakers. We needed to understand a little bit more about public health. And I'm not going to go through all of that because you know all of that stuff. What we did, though, is we looked internationally and nationally at a lot of public health models out there, and we sort of figured out that there were a couple of elements that were so core to public health that they needed to be in our framework, too. And the first one was this population-based approach. That it couldn't just be about kids with diagnosis. It couldn't just be about kids who were showing problems. It needed to be about all children, no matter where they were or what age they were, transition age, early childhood, school aged, all of the ethnicities being represented, LGBTQ, homeless, military families. All of them needed public health or mental health support. So that was the first piece. The second piece is that we learned that the public health population or the public health field was very invested in their process. And so we needed to understand that process a little bit more. So we took those process steps and we actually adapted them a little bit, which I'll talk a little bit more about later. But we were very committed to being true to some of the things that were fundamental to a public health approach. So that was the next one. And then the rest of them were really about intervention. So we wanted to make sure that mental health for children intervened in ways that promoted and prevented and didn't just treat. That was really important. That mental health could address the determinants of health, especially the social determinants of health. We noticed that lots of what goes on in public health happens in environments. And that mental health, at the time we were looking around, we were saying, you know, a lot of the mental health that's being offered is being offered in therapist's offices. Why is this not happening where children live, learn, and play? It changes the nature of the field, the people that are addressing mental health. No longer is it just a therapist or a clinician. Now it becomes the soccer coach. Now it becomes the teacher. Now it becomes the probation officer. That has to be involved in thinking about a public health approach to mental health. And lastly, we know that one size doesn't fit all with our communities, right? What works in West Chicago wasn't necessarily going to work in Springfield. We know that it's important to adapt the implementation and strategy of a public health framework to the local community, which requires that assessing piece, that data gathering piece. So after after we did all of that, we realized there was a different intervention model that we wanted to come up with. And we actually invented a new term for us anyway. We've heard about it in terms of community disaster, but we hadn't really heard about it applied to health or mental health, and that's reclaiming. I'll talk about that in a minute. But what we realized, mental health likes triangles. Is public health like triangles too? The top tier being the most intensive, and then the middle tier being the sort of intensive, and the universal being at the bottom. Well, we were done with triangles. We decided that we needed a circle. So we knew that promoting and preventing and treating, because intervening wasn't working if we were going to use intervention for the whole category, treating, that made sense. But what about those young people who they have a mental health problem? They have a diagnosis of depression, or they have attachment disorder or something, and yet they were still healthy. There are people for whom they are treating a mental health problem, and yet they're healthy. And they don't really fit in the treating category, and not all programs fit in the treating category, because some of them really are promoting overall wellness and not just focusing on reduction of a problem. So we like the circle now. And you'll see that there are lines in the circle. So above the circle, we're talking about promoting and reclaiming. These are programs or services or interventions that both intend to promote health and measure the increase in positive health. Okay. Below the line, it's prevention and preventing and treating is really about reducing the negative impact from risk factors or problems. On the left side, promoting and preventing is without an acknowledged mental health diagnosis or problem. So if you're promoting or preventing, you're really talking about the whole population. If you're talking about reclaiming or treating, you have a recognition of, you're acknowledging the presence of a problem or a diagnosis. Okay. Does that make sense? Nod your heads if it does. Nod your heads this way if it doesn't. Sweet. So this is a difference from public health. Public health, it looked like to us, because I'm certainly no authority, public health looked like to us, it intervened mostly in areas of policy, through policy. We, for mental health, really wanted to broaden that a little bit. So we looked at the different ways that a public health framework could include lots of different interventions. So for West Chicago, this became very important to them, because they gathered all those providers into a room and they just asked them these questions. What do you do that promotes mental health or social and emotional wellness? What do you do that prevents? What do you do that treats? And what do you do that reclaims? Just put yourself in there. Talk about the work that you do and ask yourself which category that fits in. So now they were beginning to see themselves as mental health support, as supporters of social and emotional wellness. Didn't matter what they were doing, if they fit in that category, even if they didn't have a master's in social work or degree in psychology, they could still be up on that wall. And that was really important to them. It also helped the mental health provider see that they weren't just in that treating category. So you're not going to, this was a way of organizing interventions for West Chicago. It was a way of understanding also where are the gaps, where are we heavily focused, maybe too focused, where are we duplicative, what do we need to do in order to fill those gaps. So it helped them organize, it helps people organize. It's not meant to be everything fits in a neat category, and if you're doing prevention, you can't possibly be doing promotion, because we know that's not true. So we know that things are going to shift. But the question is, when you're putting yourself up there, what do you intend? So if you're doing a leadership program for girls, you intend to promote the positive. What are you measuring? And that helps you organize where you go and where you put yourself in that model of interventions. So this is the framework. It's based on values. We know that the APHA, we know that public health as a field, as a profession, has values. We know that system of care for children's mental health is based on values. It's community-based, culturally competent. It is family-driven, youth-guided. We can all say them. Sometimes we don't know what they mean, but we can all say them. And so we encourage communities who are creating a public health approach to think about their values. How do you want to build your framework? What are the values? And then we came up with 5 guiding principles. And those guiding principles are less negotiable than the values. They are, it's got to be a population focus. It has to include a balance on promoting positive mental health for everyone, as well as preventing problems. It has to, there's an emphasis on creating supportive environments. It adapts locally, the framework, and it involves cross-system collaboration. There are multiple stakeholders. We know that mental health can't do this alone any more than the health community can do public health by themselves. In fact, you heard a lot of these other speakers talk a lot about how the need for cross-system, cross-agency, cross-community collaboration is critical to this. So on top of the values and principles, then, you have your three: assessing, intervening, and ensuring. So Jill, the local wellness coordinator, did some assessment when she gathered all those families together to figure out what was going on. She made a data-driven decision based on that when she looked at that intervening model. So my data-driven driven decision is I want to look at ACEs as a framework because of what the families told me, and I want to help these providers understand not only ACEs but the intersection between trauma and a public health approach. And then I want to make sure that they have access, quality, and sustainability, and that's the ensuring piece. And then there's the new intervention model. So that's the framework as a whole there that is contained in the monograph. So we work with communities a little bit to think about how to start this, because for us in the mental health world, this is the next step. It doesn't replace systems of care. It expands upon it because it really takes into account all children. And systems of care has really been focused on children with serious emotional disturbance for a long time. And we really, if we can intervene early, if we can do this for young children, we can think about services for adolescents in a different way. First thing is, who's at your table? It's the first thing we really wanted to pull out, because for a long time, again, it's been the mental health care community that's been doing it by themselves. Some of the non-traditional providers, the faith-based folks, the theater department, what Zochil discovered in West Chicago was, even though they were focused on young children, moving into the high schools made sense. Why? Because that's where a lot of the young children, their mothers, were going to school. So how do we create some support for these moms so that they can do a better job promoting the social and emotional well-being of their children, so that 10 years down the road, 15 years down the road, that high school might look a little bit different. So expand who's at your table. Think about non-traditional providers. The other thing that was that has been very useful to us is thinking about language. What is it? We all come to this from different disciplines speaking different language. Even the social and emotional wellness, mental health, is a very heated conversation sometimes. It has meaning for people. So when you bring multiple stakeholders around the TATE language, prevent, treat, and reclaim, you have to first decide what language you're going to use. And how do you use it then to invite people to the table, as opposed to putting up a lot of words and acronyms that aren't so inviting to our families and to our young people. And then creating the strategic plan and the formative evaluation. And the most important part, I think, is engaging your community in the change that you want to see. And so our work has been to help folks do that so that they can marry the science and the data of what they're doing with the community need to see the change and own the change that's right for them. So those are the two. The expanding who's at the table and building a shared language have been particularly meaningful for the communities that we've worked with. And then I'll just skip to this call to action piece. You know, we were naive enough when we put out a conceptual framework that we thought that because we thought it was a good idea, that everybody would read it and think, yes, this is exactly what we want to do. In fact, though, we've noticed that even though this might be a good idea, it takes a call to action. It takes a sense of urgency to get these communities to really look at the profound and transformative change that a public health approach to mental health can really represent for a community. So we started collecting stories around the country. We want to understand what has motivated communities to take this change on. We talked with a group in Maine, and they were facing some really profound serious prescription drug abuse in their adolescence, and it was destroying their population. And there was a very big component of their community was tribal, and so there was a lot of history, historic trauma, and current family trauma that was a part of that. And they were so distressed that it got them to the table in a way that no one person owned the grant, no one person owned the money, no one person owned the model. Everybody owned it because it was their community. Also in West Chicago, I'm not sure that a public health approach would fly to the degree that it did without this sense of our families, there's a community-wide depression. Our families are suffering. We need to get them to the table because this has to change. So yeah, it's a good idea. I think it's a good idea. But communities aren't going to really take it on because it's a good idea. They really need a call to action, something that brings them all to the table, keeps them at the table, and keeps them in a collaborative and sort of equal way, working with each other, working with their families, working with their youth, and I can't stress that enough. The youth need to be there to help these families or to help these communities make the change that they want to see. So here is our contact information. If you're interested, changematrix.org is a website. Is our website. We have a couple of webinars on there, and we just put one up there on a public health approach to mental health, which uses an illustration of a family with four children to illustrate the promoting, preventing, treating, and reclaiming, and the fact that these are dynamic and they change and they can shift, and all of their children needed attention and promotion and support around their mental health, and then also uses a community snapshot to take it out of the realm of sort of the high academic theory and really help people understand what this is about. So I would really invite you to go to changematrix.org and look at our public health focus page and find that webinar. It's downloadable. It's free. We just want to make this information accessible to people. The other thing is I brought six, that's all I could manage, copies of the expanded executive summary for the monograph, but it's also online. If you Google a public health approach to children's mental health and you see the National Technical Assistance Center for Children's Mental Health at Georgetown, that link is there. Again, it's a free download. It's 140 pages. That executive summary is only 60, so that's shorter. So I'm happy to give out what I have, but I'd also invite you to go to the Georgetown website and download that if you're interested. So I feel like I've hogged all the time. But we want to invite you to ask questions of all of us, and we can stay after if you have questions. So thank you very much, and look forward to hearing what you need to know. Yeah.